Much everybody, if we could get back to our designated seating, then we can continue on with our meeting. Again, thank you very much everyone. I hope everyone had an opportunity to grab some snacks and something to drink, some warm coffee. I think, as I mentioned before, we took our little bit of a break. We did have some questions that were deferred to tonight's session presented by the QIA. So I'll turn things over to Baffinland and Oliver to address those questions initially, and then we'll look to the community members here to any questions that they might have regarding Baffinland's presentation and the project. Thank you.
Thanks, David. It's Oliver Curran with Baffinland. So I recorded six questions here that Solomon provided. The first two relate to sewage treatment, and then the third one was related on slide 21 related to culverts. So I'll let Jim Millard speak to those first three, and then I'll speak to the last three.
Yeah, thanks, Oliver. My name is Jim Millard. I'm the Senior Environmental Superintendent for the Mary River Project, and I've been there since March 2008. The first question that this is what I understand the question to be, and if I don't have it right, please feel free to correct me, but I think the question was sewage treatment at Milne and why there is no treatment or something along those lines. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, that's a good question. I mean, the right question that you refer to. That they say they have the tank coming off from the facility or the houses, whichever that comes.
Yes.
And they pumped it out through the sewage truck.
Yes.
The
okay.
Question is that where that sewage truck is disposed to.
Let me explain what happens at Milne Inlet. We have a small sewage treatment plant there, and that sewage treatment plant can handle up to nominally about 40 people, but in reality can handle up to 60 people or so. So it's a fairly small sewage treatment plant. It's called a rotary biological contactor system, an RBC. And when camp numbers are in the range of 20, say 12 and greater, it makes sense to fire up that plant. So when there are not more than 12 people in camp or 15 people in camp, we don't use the sewage treatment system. What we do is we use latrines, and we collect sewage in drums, and those drums are stockpiled in contained areas for shipment south for proper disposal at sea lift time. Now, when the sewage treatment plant is operating, there is not a there is not a pipeline to convey the sewage to the ditch, which goes to, so we treat the sewage. The sewage is fully treated. We sample it. It meets requirements. We can move that sewage via suction truck, which is I think what you're referring to Milne Inlet, to the ditch that goes to Milne Inlet, and we discharge it from there. But it fully meets, when we discharge that, it fully meets the water license requirements. That's the answer to the first question, Solomon. Okay. The second question that I understood was sewage treatment at Mary River, with regard to how the sewage gets conveyed to Sheardown Lake. So we've got a good picture up here, and let me show you. The location of that is the RBC, the Rotary Biological Contactor Sewage Treatment Plant. And you can't quite see it. The resolution is not good enough. But there is a line that goes from the sewage treatment plant to our ponds, these two ponds. So this is pond number two and pond number three. Then past the sewage treatment plant, there is a line which goes all the way to sewage, a pipeline that goes all the way to Sheardown Lake. So what happens during operations is that all sewage gets pumped first to these ponds. So we have never, ever discharged sewage from, or treated sewage from our treatment plant directly to Sheardown Lake. All the sewage, treated sewage, goes to the ponds first. Then we sample the ponds to ensure that the treated sewage meets the water license criteria. And then it gets pumped from the ponds over to Sheardown Lake. Now, if you are visiting the site, it looks like the pipeline is a continuous pipeline all the way to Sheardown Lake. But in reality, there's a tee off which goes to the ponds, and the line which goes to Sheardown Lake is shut down, and it's actually locked down with a lock. And you need a key to open that in order to move the sewage to pump the sewage to Sheardown Lake. So that's question number two. You good? Okay. Question number three relates to the culverts that will be used for the upgrades to the tote road, as well as the rail line. So I think the question was what are the culverts made of, and can they withstand loads, et cetera? So let me just give you a bit of information about the types of culverts that we'll be using there. We'll be using very heavy-duty, engineered, steel corrugated culverts of sufficient gauge to withstand the heavy loads that we expect along the rail alignment, and they will be sized and designed appropriately for the loads that we expect along the tote road. They'll be installed in accordance with engineered for construction designs. The installation will be monitored by field engineers or technologists, as well as environmental folks will be out there monitoring the installation of these culverts. This is our standard procedure for culverts and for crossings. And after the culverts are installed, we'll have a comprehensive program where we periodically visit these locations at certain times of year to ensure that the culverts are indeed withstanding, or they're maintaining and in good condition. As well, we'll be looking at issues like possibility of erosion. They will be designed to minimize erosion because we'll have access to coarse rock material that we can lay alongside the outlets and the inlets of the culverts to prevent erosion. It's called riprap, so we'll be using a lot of that to prevent erosion, and we'll be monitoring that very closely because it'll be important for us. It'll be important to ensure that the culverts stay in good condition so that we can continue to support the rail and road traffic that's required, as well as to ensure that there's ongoing fish passage through the culverts for fish. So that would be the answer I would give to the third question.
I think it's not really about how the construct is made. I think it's more like what type of material is it suitable for the okay. environment. I think that's more the question. Thank you.
Sorry for the long-winded answer there. It's corrugated steel of sufficient gauge, yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Jim. It's Oliver Curran with Baffinland. So, Solomon, I'll answer the next three questions that you had given us earlier today. So you had a question regarding slide 28 and 29 related to pit water quality and time to fill the pit. So I'll use the same diagram or the same picture here that Jim did. So this is deposit number one right here. This is the whole reason for the project. So at closure, there's going to be an open pit. So this portion of the picture here, that'll be mined, and there's going to be an open pit at closure. So pit water quality is an extremely important part of our will be an extremely important part of our closure plan. And when we talk about pit water quality, we're talking mainly about pH, so the acidity of the water, and we're talking about metals within the water. So currently, Baffinland is doing geochemical evaluations to understand what the walls of the pit will be like and how they'll add to the water quality or how they'll affect the water quality. So through the review, agencies have asked us to provide estimates on how large the pit will be at closure. And as a contingency, if water quality does not meet objectives, accelerated filling of the pit, and how long the pit will take to fill naturally. I think your question related to, does our estimate of the pit filling naturally, does that include snowmelt? And the answer to the question is yes. It includes precipitation in the summertime and in the wintertime. But up at Mary River, there isn't a lot of precipitation, and so it will take a long time for the pit to fill naturally. So does that answer your question? Yep. Okay, and then your fifth question related to, on slide 46, related to blasting and the removal of explosive residue. And you used a good example of when you have oil contamination in water and you're able to remove that oil contamination by booms and other methods because the oil floats on top. When blasting residues and ammonia and nitrates, those are water soluble, so they mix with the water. So under the scenario of having ammonia in a pond of water, you're not able to skim it off the top. So our solution to this is prevention. So rather than have ammonia, unacceptable levels of ammonia in the water in the first place, our approach is best management practices and eliminating or reducing the source of explosive material in the first place so it doesn't become a problem. So does that help answer your question?
Mr. Chairman, I think that means that there's no the company or the explosive scientists that have been found the type of material that would remove the sodium ammonia, whatever you call that.
So if I understand you correctly, Solomon, the source of the ammonia comes from the explosives that are used for blasting activities. That's where the ammonia comes from. And when ammonia becomes oxidized, when it reacts with air, the nitrogen is released from it. And nitrogen is like a fertilizer. So it's it adds nutrients to a lake, or it adds nutrients to a soil, and encourages growth. And generally, you want to you don't want to add too many nutrients to any ecosystem. So our objective and our management plans will ensure that the explosive handling and management is such that we don't have excesses that cause ammonia to be released in the environment that will then turn into nitrates. So does that answer your question?
No, but we'll live with that.
Okay, so I'll move on to the last one now, Solomon, and you know, if you need more clarification, you can bring it up tomorrow. Or so your sixth question was on slide 68, which is on the sampling point locations. So I think in this the presentation I just did, in the previous one this morning, we talked a lot about that. Basically, the sampling point locations for monitoring going forward are part of our aquatic effects monitoring plan. And as I said this morning, we had a meeting in November 13th. It's an all-day meeting, and all of the agencies, including the Kikatani Inuit Association, I believe yourself and Joelle were on that call. So the development of this plan and the sampling locations involves all the agencies. And Baffinland is definitely committed to continuing that relationship we have as we move through developing the plan and finalizing the plan with the Water Board involving the Kikatani Inuit Association.
Thank you. I guess we were looking for a confirmation from the Baffinland that we will be still working with that, working towards that teamwork. Thank you.
Oliver Kerr with Baffinland. Absolutely, Solomon. Yeah, we fully commit with that, and we'll hopefully be having another meeting. We'll definitely be having another meeting prior to the hearings, probably in February sometime.
Mr. Chairman, can I have Jason to explain in English? My English is not really good.
It's much better than he says it is, but I think in terms of the ammonia question, Solomon was looking for a description of potential treatment technology or lack thereof, or if there is any potential for Baffinland to be looking at that as a, you know, a research objective going forward, considering it is a major issue with blasting, the effects of blasting for the project.
Thanks for that, Jason. I guess in short, the answer to that is yes, there are various treatments for ammonia. However, as we've described so far, is that every quarry where blasting is occurring will have a drainage plan specific for that quarry. And it's been demonstrated through numerous projects in Canada and around the world that by controlling your use of explosives at source, and by having proper handling procedures, that has demonstrated over and over and over that you can eliminate any problems by best management practices. And that's what we will do for this project.
It's Eric Madsen with Baffinland. And just to add, as all are indicated, there are other northern operations that have experienced problems with ammonia. And I'll use my former job at Divac there. Ann Wilson, who works on this file too with Environment Canada, there was extensive work done on all sorts of ammonia technologies. There's probably reports this high of what had been researched. So it's all on the Mackenzie Valley Water Board file. There's lists and lists of all these reports that have been submitted and all that. And what it came down to was exactly that. It was best management practices, and that's where Divac is right now with it. So that's the intent, taking that experience and making sure it's put forward to all the contractors that are working there and making it very clear at the start. But as far as how you can treat it, there are a number of ways to treat it, but it's very expensive, and also you're introducing a whole other environmental effect. And in Divac's case, for example, they had to bring up 100 totes of sulfuric acid up on the winter road. They sat in a building for 2 years because as we started getting control of the ammonia source, we didn't need all the sulfuric acid. And then these totes are only good for 2 years, and then they're about to disintegrate, so we had all this sulfuric acid, so we had to build a whole new steel tank at the mine site because it was becoming a human safety issue, because it could have led to explosion and safety issues. So there are all these things that have to be taken into consideration when you look at the environmental effects, but there is a lot of information on what can be done with ammonia if required.
Thanks very much. I think that was the last question that we had from the QIA. So I think we can turn the questions now to our one more.
No, Chairman, there's no question to Baffin. I think there was a question to QIA from Nunavut Water Board. From about the agreement or can you repeat that, please?
Teresa Meadows, legal counsel for the Nunavut Water Board. Thanks, Solomon. For the water user compensation agreement as a component of the IIBA, just an update with respect to the status of the Inuit Impact Benefit Agreement and the water user compensation aspects of that.
Thank you for that. I think that we might have an answer for tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the reminder there, Solomon. We'll turn now to our community members and the audience to ask questions of the applicant, of Baffinland Iron Mines Corporation, and any aspects of the project or the application for their water license, their application to the Water Board.
David, kamu na yung mga matering mito yung mga sabag ay eksemon iron ore.
And also, this is David, kamu na resident of Panalit. This is pertaining to
ore leaching. 21-year mine life. Would that affect the leaching? Would the leaching affect the fishes in the lakes and? If the leaching reaches the ocean, will it also affect narwhal and seal? My first question. Somebody can answer that later on. And the second one is the Nunavut Type A water license was applied for before the 350 million tons was considered using the tolled road. I think, to my knowledge, there will probably have to be another NURB review, and I'm not sure if I can talk about the NURB certificate or not, but you mentioned a little bit about the NURB certificate and the fact that it was a positive one, and the certificate was also issued before the 350 million ton was considered. QIA and Baffinland and other consultants were heavily concentrating in the area of Steensby Inlet, and they done a lot of study and met with community members of those communities in Steensby area. And I think Baffinland hasn't done any studies in our area, and I don't think I should go into that, but that's part of my concern. Anyways, going on with my third comment or concern about inspections, I used to work for Panatic Oils Limited in the past, and when the company hears about the inspectors coming into the site, we were informed to clean up the site, and everything looks cool, and everything looked okay. And once the inspectors leave the site, we go back to our normal doing things like not reporting oil spills or not cleaning up whatever spill was done. And I guess I'm proposing that we have inspectors, federal inspectors, 365 days a year. I'm not sure if that's possible or not with federal government cutbacks. And I'm a little bit concerned about inspections and the fact that the company will know ahead of time when the inspectors are going to be going to the site. And it would be, I mean, if the company doesn't know who's coming in and who's doing what, people can catch them behind their backs. But I'm pretty sure they're going to do a good job by complying with the terms and conditions of the water license. And I would also like to suggest that the company organize community visits to the elders and other organizations, and perhaps organize community visits for high school students in the future, so that high school students can look forward to completing their grade 12 and moving on to further education. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Those comments and question, I'll turn it over to Baffinland to respond.
Thank you, David, and thank you for those questions. with regard to your first question on the leaching of metals from waste rock, it's important to note that we have done and continue to do work and drilling of the waste rock to try to understand what the leaching from that waste rock will be. And to date, the information indicates that the leaching of metals will be extremely low, in that it will not have an effect on the receiving aquatic environment. Those are the indications now, but we are committed to continuing that work in the coming years and into the future to be able to better understand what those predictions will be. Since we our modeling is indicating that we shouldn't be having an effect on the local aquatic environment, most certainly any water reaching the ocean would not have an effect on marine mammals. So we can say that with even greater certainty just because of the distance from Mary River to the ocean. You mentioned in your second question related to the early revenue phase and the review that NURB will or is considering. I won't comment on that. However, you also mentioned that you don't believe that baseline studies have been done in the area of Milne Inlet. In fact, it's quite different. We have done extensive studies in the marine environment in Milne Inlet. In preparation for our bulk sample in 2008, starting in 2005, we did extensive marine studies in Milne Inlet for a period of 3 years and after. And with respect to the reporting of spills on site, I won't comment so much on that other than, you know, Jim can add, but we do report any spills to the Nunavut Impact Review Board on an annual basis. And with respect to having inspectors on site full time, through the IIBA, the Inuit Impacts Benefits Agreement, the QIA will have inspectors on site at Mary River at all times. So it's a good comment, and the QIA will be at site. With respect to community visits, for numerous years now, we have brought community members and government agency members to site, and we are committed to doing that going forward. So many community members, including the QIA, have been to the Mary River site, Milne Port, Steensby Inlet, along the rail corridor, up to Deposit 1. So, and we're committed to doing that in the future as required.
It's Eric Madsen here, and just to add your point about high school students, it's a very good point. Actually, when I was heading out for Christmas, I sat on the plane beside the new principal from Glulik, and he raised that point with us about educating the people in the high schools about opportunities in mining. And so the suggestion, and that relates back to the project certificate, is to work together with the QIA, with education, to understand aspects moving forward. And there's a lot of other places where they've actually added a curriculum to the high school about maybe exploration and mining, what it's all about, what kind of jobs are associated with mining, and encouraging the students to stay in school and to go out and do post-education, like take diplomas and get degrees and look at the kind of opportunities that are involved with an operation like this moving forward. So those are things we want to continue to work with education and the QIA and others to work on something like that maybe we could get some curriculums in the schools in the North Baffin here so that moving ahead in the future.
Thank you very much, Oliver and Eric. Any further questions from the community members?
Thank you. It's repeat to Lucy. I didn't really hear all of the comments pertaining to the runoff from the drilling platforms. And I don't think there are any pictures available where, like, between the creek and the drilling site, there is a bucket where it has some additives. I was referring to that additive that's in a bucket, like from the drilling site. There was runoff water from the drilling site to the river, so they didn't treat that water coming out of the drilling site. And also a wolf apparently perished. And I was going to examine that carcass. Maybe it got hidden. The carcass got hidden. So these are the comments that I want to reiterate. I didn't get a response at that time. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those comments, and I'll turn it over to Baffinland to respond.
Yeah, Jim Millard. Jim Millard from Baffinland here. Yeah, we do everything we can to control drill water at site. We use silt fences. We use when we're drilling on deposit number one, we use large sumps, which are fairly effective in controlling the water. There's two issues typically with drilling, and that is additives, and the other issue is siltation. So as far as siltation is concerned, we use sumps when we can to settle the water. We also use silt fences where it's practical, and we use silt containment filters and bags, something that we introduced last year to our program. So we're constantly trying to improve what we do. Now, further, is there at times some water that does reach rivers and streams? Yes, sometimes it does. That water is as clean as we can possibly make it. When that happens, we sample typically the water stream, and we sample downstream from the water. Now, every year, the NURB annual report and the water license report that we submit in the end of January, the end of March, contains information with regard to our drilling efforts on deposit number one and the downstream water quality along Mary River. And to date, we have not seen any type of deleterious values there at all. It's pretty good. That's my response.
Thank you very much, Jim. Back to the community members for additional questions.
Thank you, Elijah. I have a question to Baffinland. Our mines, the preparation stage, and also we're hearing about that drilling issues and the blasting, like in the past, in 1962-63 era, like when they were going to be blasting, they used some propane, or they used a certain method, and maybe my question is, like, when they're going to be blasting iron ore, when you're trying to extract iron ore, you use a different method. Maybe you can explain that a bit. And that is one. And second question is my second question. Like, they're going to be hauling ore to Maryland via the Toro using those big dump trucks. And they're going to extract the ore, crush it from Mary River, and then transport it to Melonlet. My question will be, if you can understand my question. In Pawninlet, we build roads by quarrying. Like, even though the sand is distributed during the winter time to prevent slippery areas, like, what are the negative impacts of that sand that has been finally crushed? Like, what's the difference, whether the pros and cons of sand being distributed on the roads? And in the past, near Salmon Creek, when we were building airstrip, we use a large amount of sand when we build an airstrip near Salmon Creek. And also we were able to crush some rock, and they put it on the layer. So, like, what are the pros and cons of sand that we use here in the community, and also you as Baffin Land, like, is it compatible, the content of the sand or quarrying sand? So those are my questions. Those are my two questions. Thank you. If you understand my questions.
Thank you very much for the questions, Baffin Land.
Thank you for those questions, Tolliver Kern with Baffin Land. I'll answer your question related to the use of sand and gravel on roads and airstrips, and then I'll hand it over for a bit of a discussion on the blasting of iron and the practices used there. You're absolutely right. For the building of roads and laydown areas and airstrips, there is a lot of sand or aggregate used, and we'll be getting that material from local quarries, which we'll have a permit for. And we had some conversation about this earlier in the day, where before we use a quarry, we have to do tests on it, assessments and tests, to ensure that the material is not only suitable for the use on roads and the rail embankment and airstrips, but we have to show that it's the chemicals or the metals within the rocks aren't such that they'll cause an environmental problem. So there's very strict and careful procedures used prior to the extraction of that sand and gravel. And those relate to our management plans that I was speaking about earlier in the presentation. So I'll hand it over to John Binns of Hatch Engineering, and he'll speak a little bit about blasting that will be used in our open pit.
John Binns from Hatch. The question was related to the blasting procedures that we're going to use and what type of material this produces, and how this would affect the roads leading to the roads and Milne Inlet. One of the features that Baffin Land has paid a lot of attention to is manufacturing explosives on site so that they can produce explosives which do not dissolve in water. These are known as emulsion type of explosives, and they are quite different from the AMFO type of pink prills that you may be familiar with and I used to use when I was first involved in mining. The emulsion explosive is produced in a plant on site. It is transported by truck out to the mine, and then the slurry is loaded directly into the drill hole along with the detonators and is detonated as a series of holes together, usually in a modern mine. A lot of holes would be blasted at one time, such that only one blast is held per day. The blasting would be monitored in terms of its vibration. The material that's been blasted is then transported to a crusher where it is only crushed to a size where it can be transported by truck. In the case of the Milne project, it would be transported by truck to mill. Because this is iron ore, none of the dust is expected to escape from the trucks. So there won't be a lot of iron ore dust deposited along the road between the mine site and mill. It will then be put on a stockpile at Milne Port, and from the stockpile, conveyors are used to load it onto the ore ships. Again, because this is iron ore, and because the conveyors are protected, no dust is expected to escape and fall in the water or contaminate the land around the stockpile at Milne Inlet. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you, John. I think we have a follow-up comment to your response.
You didn't really answer my question, but I have no concern about the blasting. Someone was concerned when they're going to be drilling. The runoff water was of concern. So I was just wondering, is it maybe slightly different? Maybe you don't understand the interpreter. In the past, I was involved in blasting in the 60s at Mary River when they were in the exploration stage. We used to have a drill which was operated by air.
Pneumatic drills.
Are you going to be using that, Kisu, pneumatic? Are you going to be using that same procedure when you're going to be blasting? It's a tool. That tool is what they use. The tool they're going to be using, will it contain liquid or will it use other methods? That was my question. Like just before you're going to be blasting, you're going to be drilling the ore. And also the second question, in Pan Inlet, in our community, we built an airstrip by extracting the ground. I was involved when we were assisted by the armed forces, and we extracted a large amount of land from the current airstrip. And also they added some boulders to make it secure, and also they added some crushed rock on top of the airstrip. and they covered it with different soil. And the fact that it got built in Panelit, and also at Mill River, they're going to be transporting some ore to Meoninlet. Those two, like the fact that they built the airstrip, and also they're going to be performing work at Mill River. My question was, like, was the method used in Panelit better than the method that will be crushed at Mill River? Like, when you observe these two differences, so I want to point out, I want to find out which is the best method. The fact that in Panelit we'll build roads and whatnot, and also we build lots, and in the past we used to construct roads as well. And also Baffinland Iron Mines will be building road, and transporting ore worse than actually, what's the difference? Is there a big difference? That's my only question. I just want a comparison between transporting ore and quarry, just building roads. Okay.
Additional comments there? We'll pass it over to Baffinland for response.
John Bince from Hatch. As a clarification on the question of drilling, in exploration, you use water for drilling in summer, and you have to use antifreeze for drilling in winter, because you're cooling the diamond-studded bit that is drilling an annular ring through the rock so that you can extract a solid core for analysis. That's the kind of drilling that you do. It's called diamond drilling, usually. And you use liquid for cooling. But in mining operations, that's not what we're doing. And the quickest way to drill a hole is using compressed air and a percussion type of action. So in exploration drilling, the rods are rotating at high speed. In mine shot hole drilling, the holes are relatively short, and it's a percussive action using a compressor, and the compressor blows the rock that's being crushed by the percussive action of the drill bit. Does that answer the question on drilling? The second question is related to the difference between transporting aggregate and crushed rock for, say, building an airstrip. The difference between that and carrying iron ore. They're both crushed material, but the big difference is the density or the weight of the material. The crushed iron ore is much more dense than the rock that is going to be used for building the airstrip. And so the small particles of iron ore will not blow the way sand particles will blow. Does that answer the second question?
Yes, I understand more from your statement. For example, when you're transporting material from Mary River to Milne Inlet, the sand blows from the road. And the same situation, we have the same situation here in Pond Inlet from the service trucks driving on the roads. The dust caused by the wheels of the vehicle, is it the same as the dust caused here in Pond Inlet and also in Mary River, Milne Inlet? How worse is that? I want to understand. For example, water trucks, service trucks drive around, we have all this dust flying around, and that has not seemed to affect Pond Inlet negatively. Do you think that will affect the area up there negatively, even without pollutants in the dust? Thank you.
In terms of the tote road, which will be used to transport ore from the mine to Milne Inlet, I can say that there will be less dust blown up from the wheels of the truck. So now I'm not talking about the dust blowing out of the bed of the truck. I'm talking about the dust that's produced by the wheels running along the road. We will apply chemical binders to the surface of the road. The effect of this is to produce a surface on the road which does not break up as the truck tire rolls over it. So it does not produce as much dust as you see on normal roads, perhaps here in Pond Inlet. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you very much, John. Back to the community. We've got a few more questions.
Oya na me kisi wata. Wanga jai kurasa kujokte mitte marring me ayo yunga. Se burla me okato nyaro kago marlo ma unno re mar kaikat mane akte gunai.
Oh, sorry. We might be here all night. Sorry. And secondly, just a comment in regards to Baffinland. Like after the Mare River closes, you mentioned like all of the facilities would be removed. And also near Milne Inlet, I own a house where it doesn't have a stove or bathtub. And also, please provide me a complete
furnished house.
This Baffinland Iron Mine mentions, like, I want you to give further consideration to my short question. Like, it seems the meeting seems to go on and on, and tomorrow we'll probably have another chance to comment. Like, once all the ore has been extracted and there's an open pit, and after many years, it was mentioned that it will probably take a long time for the open pit to fill with water. We as Inuit know about our Arctic environment, and each subsequent years are different. Like, sometimes there's a lot of snowfall accumulating 1 year, and sometimes hardly any snowfall. And sometimes it takes forever for snowfall to accumulate. And also in the summertime, during harsh weather, like sometimes it's very pleasant during the summertime, and sometimes it constantly rains on subsequent years. So maybe you should give that careful consideration. But as Inuit, like when the all the iron ore has been extracted and there's an open pit, so I'm assuming that it'll fill up quite quickly over the years, because the environment, like we as Inuit cannot control the environment. So you should give careful consideration. Baffinland should give careful consideration to this matter. And also, lastly, Baffinland Iron Mines, once they have been issued a license, water license, and if a license has been issued, the federal government mentioned they will periodically go inspect the site. I think that was mentioned earlier. And the inspection visits to Mary River, Melninlet, and Stainsby. I would prefer that they go inspect the sites in a timely fashion. And sometimes we hear, like as the project is being monitored at Mary River, like I'm just wondering if there are some certain steps that are not followed. We cannot confirm it, but as Inuit, the fact that we always care about the environment, the fact that it has some wildlife, and that we don't want the land to be contaminated. So I'm requesting that the sites be inspected it in a timely manner. So I will end my comments for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those comments. Is there a response from Baffinland? I actually missed, I believe, the first question due to the translation. I'm not too sure if you guys caught that. Maybe you can respond to the points that were brought up and see if everything's been answered.
Sure. Thanks, David. It's Oliver Kern with Baffinland. Thank you very much for that question, or those questions and comments. I guess I'll just speak to the your points related to weather data and filling of the pit. Of the open pit at closure, you're absolutely right. The weather does vary from year to year a lot, and we've had weather stations at the site for about 6 years now, and so we've noticed that as well. So last year was quite dry, and the year before that was quite wet. So we're using that information to do our calculations on how long it would take the pit to fill. But you're absolutely right, in the future that could change, and that's why we'll need to continue to do and collect data so that we can feed that into our closure plans. in relation to the site inspections, what I can say to that from Baffinland's standpoint is that we have our own procedures and management plans and our own internal audits that ensure that we're following our own procedures. But there's also external audits that are done by various government agencies, including and also the Kikitani Inuit Association. So they also validate that we're following the proper procedures for the protection of the environment.
Thank you very much, Oliver. Did that answer most of your concerns? Okay, moving on to the next question.
I'm always making comments. Yes, I want to express my comments, and therefore I make my comments. I don't know. There are a lot of questions I have, but first of all, I want to say in regards to the first comment that was made in regards to the fact that we built an airstrip here in Panelet. And they removed a large chunk of a small hill to build that airstrip. Like he mentioned, the airstrip material consists, it's different from the material that we use to build roads. I am speculating that the airstrip, like when you add sand and they don't remove the snow and they just add layers of sand periodically during the winter. That being the case, and I think the texture would be slightly different than as long as the gravel use doesn't contain mud, like right now in Panelet, the sand used to when they disperse sand on the roads, that generates a lot of dust. Maybe it's the texture of the gravel. Like during summertime, there's no dust, but only when the roads are very dry, vehicles cause a lot of dust on the road. And I think the Health Canada should give this some careful consideration. I want to pass on the information to them. Maybe all the dust is no good for the children and also to the elders. Like when you're walking on the road and there's a lot of dust generated by vehicles. So I have observed that the airstrip at the far end of, I was involved with the project from start to finish, and I did not lay out the gravel, but I was working in another occupation. I was not heavy equipment operator, but I have observed there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of dust. I just want to comment on that. And also, our elders are diminishing, the numbers are diminishing, and I often thought maybe the elders should be consulted more while they are still alive. The elders' knowledge is very powerful now than current knowledge, for example. When we make a comment using Inuit traditional knowledge, and sometimes people ask us, what do you mean? So they don't understand what we're trying to say. Based on those facts, the elders' knowledge should be given some more consideration when it comes to Mary River Project, and the elders and the younger generation are given some site inspections, but they don't really have all of the knowledge like us elders. The elders are very knowledgeable about Mary River, and like Panel Sangria, the elder who was sitting over here, he's also an elder, and he has full knowledge about the Mary River area. Based on that fact, the elders should be consulted more. So I just want to comment on that. Like, the elders should be giving site inspections periodically about the progress of the Mirror River project, and they can compare what they saw when they were younger, and they would be more satisfied. I just want to comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those very, very good comments. Is there a response from Baffinland?
Just give a brief response with respect to the dust on the roads. It's Oliver Curran with Baffinland. You make some good points related to truck traffic in the community of Pond Inlet and how it creates dust. As John Binns had mentioned before, Baffinland will be using dust control methods on our roads, which will greatly reduce the amount of dust that's created from truck traffic. So that has been that's been considered in our environmental assessment, and will be implemented as part of management plans. So thank you for that information.
Thank you very much. It is getting late. I'd like to give an opportunity to a couple more individuals for comments or questions.
Test. Hey.
My name is James Petirak. I know both Inuktitut and English language, so if I get confused in English, I will revert to speaking in Inuktitut and vice versa.
Seward's Lagoon stuff that I have experienced, that I took a course in that small water treatment plant, that both sites should have a small sewer plant. Straight from the camp to the small sewer plant, and dispose it to the sewage lagoon. If they can build that sewage lagoon as a bigger size of a football field size, so after that, when it comes to the lagoon, you're gonna dispose it to the environment. Like you said, there's not much precipitation up there that we can use any contaminant that we dispose to the ocean, and take samples from the lagoon to the ocean there, and give it filtration, and take some samples before it reaches down to the ocean. Before it reaches, it's almost as clear as the water that it can be, that will more protect the environment. That I just want to come up with that idea. And the other thing, for the waste oil plant, I know there's incinerators that can burn anything if it's mixed water or antifreeze or any kind of chemical that is mixed. And I know there's an incinerator with computerized that can burn anything if both Mill River and Mill Inland, or in the future in Steensby, if they can have these incinerators or bigger sewer plants that they can provide for us to protect our environment.
Thank you.
This is Jim Millard from Baffinland. Thank you very much for those comments and ideas. I would just like to give you a very quick summary of how we currently treat our sewage, and it might not be too much. It might be similar to what you're thinking and discussing. The sewage, first of all, goes through at both Milne Inlet and Mary River, goes through a treatment plant. That treatment plant is designed to meet stringent environmental criteria. That sewage, as I described earlier, goes to our ponds. Our ponds are sized such that they can hold, they could probably about a year of effluent or treated sewage from our camp. In the springtime, what we try to do is drain those ponds. Before we drain the ponds to the pipeline, which goes to the lake, we again sample the water. So there's two stages of sampling. One when it leaves the sewage treatment plant, and then another stage where it leaves the ponds. And we have a comprehensive, we don't just sample once a week or once a month. We have a comprehensive sampling program where we sample once, sometimes twice a day, to make sure that the treated sewage that goes to the lakes, goes to Sheardown Lake, meets all the stringent environmental guidelines that are in our water license. As well, once we finish discharging the sewage, treated sewage for the year, we will go out and monitor the lake as well to ensure that we have not had effect. And to date, we have had no effect on Sheardown Lake, nor do we predict that we will have one. I hope that answers that comment is helpful. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much for the response. Well, it's getting very late. I think everybody's getting tired up at the tables here. We've been meeting since 8:30 this morning, so it's been a very long day. If there's one more question, we'll entertain that, and then we'll have to wrap things up and adjourn for the evening.
Good evening, guys. David Panipakuchu.
My name is David Panipakuchu. Good evening.
Quick comments. I'm kind of worried about the campsite. I'm kind of worried about it because of the pollution. Aren't you guys going to decide or concern about the water lake? Move to somewhere else? Like 9 to 1,000 yards away from the camp. The water lake should be over by the hills or somewhere by the hills. Yeah, some of us are concerned about the campsite because of the pollution. Think about it, guys. Thank you.
Thanks very much for that that last comment. And if Baffinland would like to provide a quick response, and we'll wrap things up for the evening.
Thanks, David, and thank you for that question. It's Oliver Kern with Baffinland. I guess just to put this into perspective, your comments are noted. This distance here is much greater than it actually looks. This is Sheardown Lake here, and this is our airstrip, this distance is about 3 kilometers. And our water intake is at Camp Lake, which is at the bottom here. I guess the main point to illustrate here is, like Jim mentioned, any of the water processed on site and discharged is treated, and it meets very stringent criteria that's protective of the aquatic environment, and it's also protective for drinking water for people. And all of the water is tested to ensure that it's safe for drinking. So our track record on site to date has ensured that there is no contamination that is harmful to fish in the lakes or harmful to humans. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Oliver. I think at this point we need to close down for the evening. As I mentioned earlier, it's been a long day. I think everybody's pretty worn out. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all the members of the community that are still here. I know some have left already. And it would be, an opportunity again tomorrow morning to attend the meeting, and especially with the pre-hearing conference meeting that we're going to have to determine some of the, specifics and details of the hearing that may be scheduled in the near future. We need to have some input from the community with regards to the dates for the hearing, when to hold the hearing, times to hold the hearing, and if there's any input as far as whether or not the Water Board should be holding a hearing in other communities as well. So for sure, we believe we'll be back to Pond Inlet for the hearing, but again, there may be other opportunities as well. So again, I'd like to take the opportunity to thank everyone for coming out. As far as the meeting tomorrow, we're running late tonight, so I've had suggestions to start our meeting at 9 a.m. tomorrow, if that's okay with everybody. And we'll start off tomorrow morning. I believe we had a few questions to address that the Water Board had, and then I think we'll look at putting together some of the information for discussion prior to the pre-hearing conference. We'll look at some of the information we've put together here today, and look at possible list of further commitments to be provided within the next few weeks, short time frame following our pre-hearing conference. And then look to suggestions and recommendations as far as a potential hearing in the near future, dates, times, locations, so forth. So again, I'd like to thank everybody for coming out, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow morning.